It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. A dozen Alaska school districts received an emailed bomb threat on Tuesday. The Kodiak Island Borough School District was not among them. The Anchorage School District released a statement that said that they were, quote, taking the threat seriously, end quote, but did not close school buildings. Some rural districts, however, did evacuate their buildings due to the threat. Schools were closed in Dillingham, as well as on Annette Island and Prince of Wales Island in southeast Alaska. The Alaska State Troopers said in a statement that they're working with the FBI to investigate, but, quote, the threat does not appear credible at this time. The Alaska Department of Education and Early Development said in a statement that the 12 school districts that received the threat were following their emergency response plans. Several other school districts in the state said they did not receive a threat. They included Fairbanks, Juneau, and the Kenai Peninsula. The combination of an El Niño year with record-high sea surface temperatures in the Pacific Ocean has climatologists concerned about fall and winter storms along Alaska's coast. During a discussion on Tuesday's Talk of Alaska, Alaska climate specialist Rick Toman said that the combination of those two factors on top of what is already the stormiest time of year for many parts of the state make it likely this will be a wet fall and winter.
Somewhere in Alaska is very likely to have extreme precipitation event this winter because we've loaded the dice with the warm ocean surface temperatures across the Pacific. We've loaded the dice with an El Niño in progress in the equatorial Pacific that will affect the storm track. So really almost anywhere there is the potential for extreme precipitation in the coming storm season.
Toman warned against relying too much on individual or community experience with past weather, saying recent years have pushed the envelope of what many thought was possible for extreme weather events in Alaska.
We have certainly seen, whether it's the Mendenhall River flooding in August or Murbach or a host of other events, that things happen that and are going to happen that we do not have experience with, that it will be worse.
While these conditions are cause for concern, Toman added that it still takes the right combination of several factors for an individual storm to become an extreme event. The opioid overdose treatment Narcan became available over-the-counter in pharmacies throughout Alaska last week. Robin Lutz is executive director of Alaska AIDS Assistance Association, or 4AAS. Her organization distributes a stronger version of Narcan called Caloxido as part of their harm reduction efforts. She says having Narcan available over-the-counter can save lives. That's especially true in areas where there is no free distribution of opioid overdose kits.
When something gets offered over-the-counter, there's a little part of that action that normalizes the use of something. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I need to buy some Tylenol and tampons, and also I'm going to pick up Narcan.
Lutz says carrying an opioid overdose kit is something all Alaskans should consider, and any household with an opioid prescription should keep a kit just in case. But she worries about the cost of overdose kits. Narcan will be sold in packs of two for about $45.
Especially fentanyl overdoses that could take four doses to revive. And then that has to be readministered in a short amount of time, depending on person's system and how they're doing.
Naloxone kits are also still available by prescription and sometimes covered by insurance. And many organizations in Alaska distribute free opioid overdose kits. People can get kits at many public health centers or clinics. Repairs are complete to a severed fiber optic cable affecting internet and cellular services to much of northern and western Alaska. GCI announced the repairs in an email to customers on Monday, 14 weeks after the cable was cut in an ice scouring event in the Arctic Ocean west of Prudhoe Bay. Many people in the affected regions experienced spotty internet and cellular services and at times no internet connectivity at all. The company that builds and owns the cable, Quintillion, originally anticipated service would be restored in 8 weeks, but that timeline slipped several times. Heather Handyside is the Chief Communications Officer for GCI. When the cable initially broke, GCI switched customers to the company's satellite and Terra networks, which allowed for some connectivity. Handyside says GCI is beginning to transfer customers back to the faster fiber optic service that connects to the Quintillion cable.
And that restoral effort has already begun, and I believe that consumer customers are already seeing better service as a result.
Handyside says GCI will be monitoring the network throughout the week. She says once network levels improve, the company will discontinue the credits it's been providing customers since the initial cable break in June.
It's going to take us a while, maybe, you know, throughout the rest of the week, to fine-tune things to make sure that traffic levels are optimized and that everyone is receiving the connectivity that they were receiving prior to the break.
Internet services throughout northern and western Alaska are expected to improve throughout the week. 6 weeks ago, an unprecedented glacial outburst flood tore through Juneau, damaging dozens of homes along the Mendenhall River. Now most of those homeowners are still in limbo. Some are trying to figure out how to rebuild. Others are wondering if they even should. KTOO's Anna Canny has the story.
Amy Ballard sits perched on the edge of her couch. On a normal day, this room would be filled with the sound of Ballard's fussing infant twins, or her friends gathered around the dining table.
I loved hosting. I loved the kitchen. I loved how big it is. I like how I'm saying this in past tense because it feels weird.
Today, it's quiet, except for the sound of the rushing Mendenhall River just outside the window. Last month, a glacial outburst flood threatened to sweep away Ballard's condo. She had just 30 minutes to grab her twins and some essentials as the water tore away at the riverbank beneath her building. This is the first time she sat down on her couch since that night. Ballard can't bring herself to sleep here anymore.
I really need to just, like, get over it and live here, but I can't. I think it's done. That's hard.
6 weeks later, flood recovery is just beginning. Some homeowners are figuring out how to rebuild. Others are reassessing completely. Ballard falls somewhere in between. She and her twins are keeping cramped quarters with her parents, who own a condo across the parking lot. She'd like to move out and resettle somewhere else, but she's in financial limbo. Insurance denied her claim, and state disaster aid is moving slowly. Meanwhile, she's still paying a mortgage and property taxes for a home she no longer feels safe in. And Ballard, along with the other owners in her condo complex, is on the hook for more than $20,000 to the Homeowners Association for post-flood construction and repairs.
I don't have money to put down in another place. I mean, most people do not have money to just dump into fixing their places after natural disasters.
The goal is to protect the condos from the force of future floods. But it won't be enough to keep Ballard here.
The river was beautiful. I mean, it is beautiful. And now I look at it differently. Like, oh my gosh, you can't fight nature. Nature's going to win, right? Like, not something that I thought about a lot with.
Across the river from Ballard's third floor balcony, a dump truck drops a load of boulders onto the bank.
They've put so much rock in.
All along the river, restoration work has begun. Upstream, a large stretch of the riverbank in Joe Pagankoff's neighborhood is now lined with walls of rock. Gravel and sand are piled up around the foundation of his house on River Road.
150 dump truck loads.
Pagankoff and his wife had just finished paying off the mortgage when the flood eroded away their backyard. About a third of the house was left hanging over the riverbank. They considered it a total loss until a contractor told them it might be salvageable.
Really, I don't think I've taken more than about a 24-hour period off working on the house. And it's been mind-bogglingly hard.
Contractors were able to stabilize the building, but the bank is only partly restored. Their house is still suspended. So Pagankoff has been rebuilding the land by hand. Each day, he crawls underneath the house, equipped with a small shovel.
Okay.
This is my sandbox. And there's about 5 feet of walled sand that way. I'm about a third done. And so bit by bit, I'm shoveling over there and packing it in and then just moving my way this way.
Even as Pagankoff is doing so much of the work himself, the cost for contractors and materials will come out to about $150,000. Pagankoff had to cash in on his retirement savings to fit the bill. All this restoration work that he and his neighbors are doing is far from over. And Pagankov said the real test will come with next year's flood.
The one thing this Yokolup proved is there is no complete. There is no certainty.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth Kent has nothing left to save. She lived in the house from the viral video, the one of a White House collapsing into the river. Kent and her husband were on sabbatical in Nicaragua when it happened. Her colleagues saw the video on news channels there. Kent and her neighbors along the riverbank helped each other to figure out what numbers to call. In the weeks after the flood, she spent a lot of her free time calling insurance companies, her mortgage broker, the city, and the state.
I think there's this momentum right after it happened of like, okay, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to find all the resources and like figure out next steps, and like you can't.
None of those agencies have promised any aid. By now, Kent feels she's exhausted all of her options. Recovery has become a waiting game. Kent says some officials have told her to hold out for federal assistance from FEMA. But she has her doubts. FEMA is already facing a funding shortage after other devastating disasters last month, including the deadly wildfire in Maui and Hurricane Idalia in Florida. Kent's been spending a lot of time thinking about people in those places.
It does make me realize that, oh my gosh, all the disasters I've ever heard about, this is what happened to those people afterwards.
For now, she's staying in Nicaragua. She's not yet sure when or how she'll rebuild when she comes home. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Rural Alaskans have not been left out of the epidemic of deaths and medical emergencies caused by the combination of addiction with the reality that many street drugs these days are adulterated with doses of extremely potent fentanyl, easily smuggled because there's no need to transport more than a tiny amount of the drug. First responders and law enforcement are struggling to keep up. In Bethel, the police department has a new tool, an officer with remarkable talents. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello has the story.
There's a new sheriff in town. Well, more like police officer. And he's got four legs. Bethel residents may have already seen him on a short leash.
The K-9 officer is actually Zeus, who is a 2-year-old German shepherd.
Bethel Police Chief Leonard Pete Hicks introduced the dynamic duo at City Hall during the last city council meeting.
Sergeant William Charles is our K-9 officer. Well, he's a K-9 handler.
According to the chief, this is the police department's first K-9 officer. Officer Zeus arrived earlier this month after graduating from the KIPP K-9 Academy in Lincoln, Alabama.
He's a very good dog. He's extremely smart. He wants to get out there and work like a working dog. You know, he's anxious to get there. You can see he's got that drive to get out there and do it. And we're hoping for some good things. The trainer and everyone who helped us train the dog and get him ready to come up here have come in. Our K-9 handler, Sergeant Charles, is a natural with it. They're confident that he'll be able to do pretty good things with the dog. And hopefully he will help us make a difference out here.
Officer Zeus hails from Georgia, and he is trained to do multiple things.
He's trained to do narcotics detection, so he'll be used for that as well. He's also trained to do tracking, so he can help with search and rescue and prisoner apprehension. If someone takes off on us, you know, he can help track them down. He's not a bite dog, so he's not trained to bite people, but he is trained to sniff them out for us.
According to the Alaska Department of Public Health website, from June 2022 to May 2023, there were almost 225 opioid overdose deaths in Alaska. Just this past August, there were almost 100 opioid-related emergency room visits and almost 300 all drug-related visits. Chief Hicks says he has seen an increase in reported meth usage, heroin, and fentanyl overdose cases in Bethel, so Officer Zeus has his work cut out for him.
Yeah, he'll work his regular rotation, his regular shift, but then he'll also be on call to assist the department or any other agencies that may request assistance from us for either narcotics or tracking or however else we can help them with the dog.
As a fellow dog lover, there's an impulse to boop the snoot, but Chief Hicks warns against that.
Just, you know, give him time when you see him out and about, give him time to get used to the area, to the environment. You know, don't just run up and grab him. You know, if you want to meet the dog, talk to the handler first and let him facilitate that. That way you don't spook him while he's adjusting to the new environment.
Zeus and his handler, Charles, will be partners for life. The bond is important. It builds trust. Hicks believes this new addition will make a difference in the YK Delta. Boop! In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
North Pole voters will consider two ballot propositions to monitor the city's water for new contaminants and to replace the oldest part of its water system that's leaking badly. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, North Pole's mayor says state officials have agreed to forgive the two loans to pay for the work if the city meets requirements.
Propositions 1 and 2 ask North Pole residents to approve the city accepting state loans that would pay for study and design work to help solve two problems with its water systems. Prop 1 asks voters to agree to the city accepting a $1.5 million federal loan through the Alaska Division of Water State Revolving Fund to monitor for contaminants, especially those among a group of chemical compounds collectively known by their acronym PFAS.
We call that per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances.
North Pole Mayor Mike Welch says if approved, the loan also would help the city begin monitoring and mitigating contamination from PFAS, the compound that causes numerous long-lasting health threats, as well as other emerging contaminants.
So those contaminants are not just limited to PFAS, but other things like organic pollutants and biologicals and microorganisms, compounds of pharmaceuticals and personal care products.
Welch says city officials are asking voters to approve the loan because of increased state and federal regulation of those substances and also growing local concern over a plume of PFAS groundwater contamination that originated on Eielson Air Force Base and is moving down gradient toward North Pole.
The issue here is that the plume, PFAS PFOA plume, is actually coming this way.
If voters pass Prop 1, the city would pay just under $87,000 annually out of the general fund over 20 years. But Welch says that shouldn't be necessary because the state has assured city officials that they'd cover the loan.
Of course, it's been stated they would reimburse 100%, but we still have to go through the formality of asking the taxpayers to approve that.
The mayor says state officials made the same offer for the second loan that North Pole is asking voters to approve under Proposition 2. If passed, the city would borrow $653,000 to develop a plan and design work for replacing 8 miles of aging, leaky, thin-gauge stainless steel pipe in the oldest part of the water main distribution system.
The downtown loop in the core of the old city. That real thin stainless steel pipe was put in 52 years ago in 1971.
Welch says those pipes are badly rusted and riddled with numerous leaks.
We have constant leaks that are significant.
He says if North Pole voters approve Prop 2, the city would repay the 20-year loan with monthly payments of nearly $38,000 out of a water department fund that utility customers pay into every month. But Welch says officials with the State Department of Environmental Conservation, which is overseeing that loan program, have assured him they'll forgive that loan if the city meets the requirements.
You have to show that your citizens accepted this. And in return, once it's proven that we did our due diligence and the citizens said, oh, by all means, then you get those loans forgiven.
Also on October 3rd, North Pole voters will consider three candidates vying for two open city council seats. The candidates are Larry Turch, Ellen Glab, and Benjamin Williams Jr. In North Pole, I'm Tim Ellis.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Ford has a tentative labor agreement with Canadian workers. I'm Novosapo with the Marketplace Minute. Unifor represents workers at three Canadian plants. It did not disclose details of its agreement with Ford, which workers still have to ratify, but its key demands did include improved wages and pensions, just like the United Auto Workers Union in the U.S. Meanwhile, the UAW says more auto workers walked off the job today, this time in Alabama. About 200 employees at the manufacturer ZF are said to be striking at a plant that makes axle systems for Mercedes. Investment management firm PIMCO says a federal government shutdown is more likely amid tensions in the House. Should one occur, PIMCO expects the Federal Reserve will be less likely to raise interest rates in November. I'm Novosapo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 20th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:50. It will set again at 8:14. That will give us 12 hours and 24 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high on this date was 71 degrees, set in 1965, and a record low was 33, set in 1948, and then again in 2021. Currently 55 degrees, fair skies, southwest winds to 10 miles of visibility out at the airport. They're calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, although with a few scattered showers. Those scattered showers are expected to go until about 10, then a slight chance of rain between 10 and 4, mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 47, and west winds 5 to 10. For tomorrow, just a slight chance of rain between 7 a.m. and 4 p.m., then scattered showers after that. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 52 and northwest winds around 15. Scattered showers for Thursday night, too. But on Friday, mostly sunny. Saturday, partly sunny. Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, just a chance of rain.
KMXT is awaiting a new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game here in Kodiak. To hear the most recent announcement regarding openings and closures around Kodiak, call 486-4559.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 miles. Small craft advisory through tonight with southwest winds to 25 knots for today and tonight. Seas to 8 feet. Those winds are expected to turn to the west to 15 after midnight. For tomorrow, northwest 20 and seas to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, south 20 today, seas to 5 feet. Southwest 20 tonight with 5-foot seas subsiding to 3 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, on our west side, northwest 20 and seas to 4 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak Bay and southwest 20 today and 3-foot seas. Southwest 15 tonight, becoming west 10 after midnight with 3-foot seas. And for tomorrow in Chiniak Bay, northwest 10, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, southwest 10 today with 2-foot seas. Eventually becoming variable less than 10 tonight with 2-foot seas. And for tomorrow up in Marmot Bay, northwest 10, seas to 1 foot. The Kodiak Arts Council's annual meeting will be held tonight at 6 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Learn about achievements and challenges faced during the previous business year, and reports will be presented by staff, board members, and member organizations. Additionally, elections will be conducted to fill 4 seats on the board of directors. You're invited to remain after the formal proceedings for a chance to socialize. The Balalaika Players will be providing entertainment, and Java Flats will be providing refreshments. There will also be an opportunity to meet the new executive director, Molly Miller, and interact with board members. The annual volunteer training for the Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is coming up. That's happening Thursday and Saturday. For more information and to register, call them up at 907-512-0600. Or visit the website at www.hpck.org. And it's coming up, the annual Kodiak Salmon Life Celebration. It's a community celebration of all things salmon. Lots of fun. They have a potluck, live music, kid activities, bring your own everything. And that's happening next Sunday, September 24th, between 3 and 7 p.m. at the Abercrombie State Park Pavilion. Be there or be square, next Sunday, 3 to 7 p.m., Abercrombie Pavilion. Local elections are coming up. KMXT and the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce are sponsoring the 2023 Candidate Forum. That's happening next Monday, September 25th, and Wednesday, September 27th, at the Borough Assembly Chambers. At 6 p.m. on Monday the 25th will be the City Election Candidate Forums, beginning with the race for City of Kodiak Mayor, followed by the race for two seats on the City Council. And on Wednesday the 27th, the Borough-wide Candidate Forums will begin, beginning with the School Board candidates at 6 p.m., followed immediately by candidates for the Borough Assembly. The forums will take place at the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers, or you can listen here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. Once again, that's 6 p.m. on Monday for City Mayor and City Council candidates, and Wednesday the 27th for borough-wide candidates. And Election Day, of course, is October 3rd. Dinner and the Movies back at the library. You bring your dinner, and they show the movie. That's happening tonight at 6:30 p.m., the library will show Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, based on Judy Blume's classic novel. It's rated PG-13, and the runtime is 106 minutes. 6:30 p.m. tonight at the library. The following are upcoming public meetings.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.